Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 320, my deep and thoughtful conversation with artist Ty Malik Coleman. But first, I thought I'd mention how Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Audible is an app on which you can listen to books. It's an app that I use regularly, and I wanted to assure you it's really very easy to use. And believe me, there have been apps that I gave up on, but this one is very user-friendly. So when you sign up, you immediately get access to hundreds of books and podcasts just automatically available as soon as you start your membership. Then every month you get a credit, which you can use to buy something outside the main library, like that brand new bestseller that's making the rounds of your book club. You know the one. It's time right now to go on over to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. It's a fun and easy way to make it through your TBR list. Now, let's get back to talking about this week's guest. This week on Yes But Why, Baltimore-based improviser Ty Malik Coleman regaled me with stories about all the artistic worlds that he has explored and about all the funny adventures he had along the way. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 320. Ty Malik Coleman and the many branches of his tree of creativity. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
So, I like to talk about childhood. I like to talk about the moments when we're kids and how we play. And I think it really reflects on who we are as an artist, as an adult. So earlier when we were chatting, you mentioned that, you know, you were a big explorer of the backyard. There was a lot of inventing and adventure stories in your head as you went out there. How do you think that connects to how you've become as an artist now?
Yeah, I definitely think there's several things. One, the playfulness shows up a lot in how my creative process, and not just, you know, when I'm doing improv, because I think improv is kind of naturally a playground, but also as a storyteller, for the process of creating the stories and really reaching back, most of my stories are about me. And so that process of kind of reaching back and touching those places, some of those are great places to touch and some of those are not so great. There's a playfulness that is in all of my work that I do that definitely reaches back to those childhood roots. And also this concept of a world to be explored. And that's generally how I approach art. There's all these worlds around me that I get to explore. And I feel really grateful for that. And the idea that I'm seeing something that's not seen. I think that there's divinity in creativity and creating something that is not there. That's a divine process. Did not finish The Artist's Way. I quote The Artist's Way like I've done it, and I think I've gotten through three chapters, but
it's hard. It's really hard.
It's so hard.
I want to say I maybe made it through the first chapter. It's so hard. I can't.
But it's so good.
Right. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's perfect. When we finally get through it, we'll know. I'll call you and I'll be like, I finally did it. There's this amazing, the jewel at the end. You're like, what?
What?
Yeah, but right. we won't know. But it's okay. It's okay. I'm with you on the halfway journey. Tell me about
it. Yeah. I only know one person who's she's finished it. She's gone on to the second book, but she's brilliant. Karen Rose Bruning, who lives in New York, is this wonderful filmmaker, really great friend of mine from college, who got me into The Artist's Way. She's the only person I know that's finished The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really loved about it was talking about like the divinity in creativity. And I think that that concept that I am approaching a world that's not seen by the rest of the world yet, and I get to show the world through my eyes, like this new thought or this new idea, or even if it's an old idea in this new perspective, in this new way. And all of that kind of just reminds me of packing my backpack up with Legos and going in the backyard and just, what are we exploring? Because sometimes it was dinosaurs in the backyard, you know, and sometimes it was caves to a foreign land that hadn't been named yet. Like, there's always something to be explored in there. And even though, like, the tools were the same, I think I had Legos that didn't, and they weren't like, we didn't have a ton of money, so it wasn't like I had like this nice set of Legos. It was these mismatched Legos. Remember those big blocks? They weren't they were like the Legos, but they weren't Legos. They were just like these off-brand big ass blocks. I don't know what they were.
The big, big ones or the medium? Because now they have ones that are supposedly for littler kids that are bigger. But I feel like the way your hands are being held out, I feel like you're talking about mega blocks, maybe these huge
I think
ones.
I had a mix of like medium, big, and small.
Sure.
So they weren't like they weren't Legos to build something. They were just Legos that I used no matter, depending on what was happening in my adventure, every Lego was a different thing, right? Like sometimes it was a sword, a gun, sometimes. Now I think I was destructive. Because my first two weapons, it's just like, maybe I was destroying worlds. Maybe I need
you know what, though? I feel like every bit of, I mean, maybe not today necessarily, but like certainly when we were kids, the kind of child entertainment was like, here are the good guys and here are the bad guys, and they're going to shoot at each other a bunch. And you're like, this seems right. Like, because we were putting on some old 70s and 80s like cartoons for our kid. And I was like, wow, this is what we were watching? This? Wow. Oh, God. There's like 14 deaths in the first 3 seconds. Like, it's fine. Okay. Like, it was just like, and my husband's like, yeah, it's all right. Yeah. I mean, you just like, yeah, I mean, I know he cut him in half with his sword, but like, it's fine. Is it fine, though? I mean, it's just like, so, yeah. I feel like there was no getting around that. Like, you're right. Not, you know, it all depends on what like kind of stuff. And I realize that from my own child as well. Like, he'll watch a show, and then after that, all the things that he's playing with, he interacts with like the show, you know?
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, great. Like, fascinating how he like takes in the information. And I think about us, you know, like when you were a kid, maybe just like the shows you watched had a lot of like shoot 'em ups. And so you're like, yeah, I mean, that's clearly the activities that occur. I mean, sounds like you were Indiana Jones, which I love the idea of. And there's shooting and whipping and
Indiana Jones was kind of a horrible person looking back. Like, he definitely that would not have been made. I was like, you were very problematic, Indiana Jones. He was like, I was just
every
going
character,
around.
Yeah.
Every character. And the funny thing is that I only remember seeing like maybe one Indiana Jones, maybe most of one. And so it wasn't like I watched this thing over and over. It was just the idea of I'm gonna be explorer guy and you know, conquering world. That was enough for me. And I think that other part about just exploring a character and really having fun of exploring like this interior character. Cause I remember once, whatever time of day it was for me to go into explore, as I'm packing the bag, I remember like the character starting, you know, it wasn't like once I hit the bag, like I was, you know, I moved slower, differently, like, and all that stuff. And I remember like thinking like I'm getting it, like I am the explorer now. And like, that was, everything was starting to morph into that. And when I get really lost into a character, that's how I feel. Like I'm not performing this character. Like, I am the character. Like, this is how I'm thinking, my motivations and all that. So yeah, there's a lot that came out of that backyard time now that I think about it.
Wow. Well, I mean, realistically, it seems like you just had the natural ability of the, you know, acting and, you know, spending time in these other characters' perspectives. You know, I've definitely, I've had lots of jobs in theater, and so I've interacted with a lot of actors, and I think some people are putting it on, and then I think some people are like in it, like you're talking, where it's like you essentially, it's almost like you're underwater. You're like, I'm in this now, as opposed to some people I've watched act, and it's just like they put a jacket on. You know, like it's right. A different kind of, they're doing it. I get it. You know, yeah, you're that guy. Makes sense. And I'm into it, you know, but like some people really deeply feel it. And it's interesting to hear you discuss that even from an early, you know, even when you were a child, you like remember these moments of like allowing yourself to be in this character. I've seen some child actors like that, and that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I never even thought like that. Thank you.
Did you ever do any acting as a child? Like how, at what point in your like childhood or adulthood did you finally find a way to take this natural talent that you have to live in these characters and be like, oh, wait, I can do that as a job? Because it's not always currently apparent. People aren't always like, you know what a job you should do is. You should be an actor. There's no one. There's very few people. There's me. No. And that's it.
Yeah, it was never like, I noticed that you're getting lost in your head a lot. You know, another way to get lost in your head is that conversation did not happen growing up. I didn't even know what I was doing, right? I was just playing pretend. And so as a kid, I think I was a very serious kid, meaning that like all of my aspirations were, I wanted to be, it was either going to be a president or the chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Like that was it. Like that was it. And that was my path. So yeah, I didn't have time for silly shit. You know, it's like, I have a very serious like military path ahead of me or a political path. So like that was it. And I had very, it was really clear. My parents were in the army, by the way. So just in case it's not apparent why as a 7-year-old, I was like, Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's me.
Never know. A couple of well-placed books and you could easily have been like, hey, I heard about this job. And by the way, I'd be amazing at it. So that's what we're going to do now.
Yeah.
And you probably would be amazing at it. I mean, like solid. Now I'm like, huh, listen, this is still possible. Let's get him
in the military.
Maybe this is later. Well, no, you don't have to be in the military to be the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Or the president. So, you know, hey, so you don't go that way. That's all right.
Right.
Thanks. You right in the White House. I'm working it.
I'm finally, my mom's going to be so happy I finally have a fallback plan. Because I was like, for what? Work. I'm like, Mom, relax. I know you want me to have a plan B. It's the presidency. So take a load off, lady. I got this.
I got this.
Working a plan B. I didn't really think about art as a serious practice, and definitely not acting. When I was in high school, I took a couple of drama classes that I really liked, but I wasn't in a drama production. I like drama. I was like, okay, that's cool. And it was, again, something I kind of put away. And so it wasn't until my like early mid 20s that I started kind of exploring this piece of me that was always there. I just didn't know what it was, right? I knew I was funny. I knew I was, you know, I had imagination. I knew I could write a little bit, but I really didn't know what it was. And I lived in DC at the time. And I wanted something to do. I wanted to make friends. Making friends after college is weird because it's just people are just, no, I don't want to do that. That's weird. And so I was trying to figure it out. And then I heard about improv and I that might be cool. And so I took this improv class. And as soon as I took it was a free workshop. And as soon as I took the workshop, thank you. Finally, yes, this is exactly what I mean by this is how my head works. It was like finding a love, right? It was finding a love, like, you know, like in a love story, you go around and you think like, I'm the only one who's like this, like has these little quirks and everything else. And you meet this person and they're this reflection of you and you're like, I'm in love now. And that's what improv was. I thought I was the only one that had like these weird ways of seeing the world, thinking all my little bits had a place now, you know, I was like, oh, wait, this is where all my bits go. This is perfect. And I fell in love. I fell deep in love. I took a workshop, I took classes, and that was my first, like, finally getting a piece of myself, that I get. And so that's where I fell in love with the stage as well. Like, I fell in love with being on stage, and that was, oh man, I don't even remember, like 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. Was that and then
it's okay, I don't even know, I just on my birthday I have no idea how old I was, I had to do the math. I was like, hold on, oh right. This is how old
I was, I trying to remember. You're fine. I was trying to find it before this podcast because I was thinking, okay, I know that we're going to talk about the beginnings of my creative journey, so I was trying to find when, and my Gmail was like, I can't help you with that, I don't know. I'm in the Gmail search like, okay, let's You're find so the funny. First email. And it's like, no, we don't. Right. We don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's some time ago.
I care about feelings. I don't care about dates.
Well, that's my other piece.
I'm feeling this love. So yeah, I get it.
That's the other part of myself. So you know, I take these improv classes, and then I think a year later is when I also start storytelling. So I take a storytelling workshop. And that was beautiful because I was trying to like get over this breakup. Mm. And I went to this workshop, was at Artscape, and I'm learning about storytelling. And so I'm like, okay, I tell this story. And when I tell it, I actually get a perspective that I hadn't got before. Mm. I was like, oh, yeah, I really was an asshole. Like, it was just like, I didn't really see it like that. I've been like nursing my broken heart, but like this, I really didn't give her a choice. Like, I really, this was set up bad. And then I was fascinated by that process. Just like, okay, this storytelling, because storytelling wasn't new. Like, I think that's how we just communicate in general. Like, we just tell stories. Mm-hmm. One of the things I used to love to do with my grandparents is kind of sit at their feet and just listen to stories about my family, about their childhoods and stuff like that. So I've always been fascinated with stories and repeating stories. But then this process of, there's this art form that I love that I can do well, and that kind of helps me heal a little bit. I was like, this is kind of cool. And so I started kind of exploring both of those at similar times. And that was fun. Like that, just falling in love with it. And I also had really good first experiences with both of those art forms, which I think is helpful. So in improv, I still remember my very first showcase, my very first class. I was in, like, everyone was nervous, and I got out there and like did this scene, and I had like this perfect timing on this silly ass turkey sandwich line. And it was the best feeling in the world. I was like, oh, and everyone was like, oh man, when you did that line, da, 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 da. And it was just this, I was like, okay, I want this for the rest of my life. And storytelling was similar because after that workshop, the organizers for Stoop Storytelling, Jess Hinken reached out, and this was again 11 plus years ago. It's like, hey, I remember you from this workshop. Would you like to come tell a story? And it was about family. And so I told a story about coming out to my family, specifically my dad, and what that was like. But the story was at like Center Stage in Baltimore. It's like the biggest theater in Baltimore. So like the very first time I got on a storytelling stage, it was to this huge sold out audience at Center Stage. And I was like, well, yeah, if this is storytelling, I definitely want to do this. So I had these positive and unrealistic expectations of what what my life as a performer would be like. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I will make people laugh at everything I say and be in sold out stage in huge theaters. Of course, sign me up for this theater. And that's what I thought was gonna happen. That's not how it happened. But it was a great way to get hooked in. Yeah, and I started doing that. And but at the time I was when I was saying my other part of my brain, like trying to find precision, I was working as an insurance accountant supervisor. Fun is not a word for that. But it was interesting because it's so very far away from most of my, who I am, but there's a piece of me that always, there's like this controlling, there has to be a right answer piece of me, and accounting was helpful for that. Cause there had to be a right answer. Cause we can't just not, there's no ambiguity. It's like, if they don't balance, I need to find the answer. And so I think that was helpful, but it was also, I was also just at the end of that, it was for 8 years, which is wild to me. Cause now if I don't feel good about something after 7 months, I'm like, and we're off for another adventure. But I was, I was miserable. I was like, I don't like this. And I had been by that time performing improv and was like really, dipping my toe into performing, into teaching, not just for adults, but also for young people. And I remember I was dating this woman at the time, and she was also miserable at her job. So she quit her job, and I was complaining about my job. It was like a week after she quit, and she said, "You can quit your job or never talk to me about your job again, but those are your options." I was like, what the hell? But I quit. I was like, I don't know why that was such a weird ultimatum looking back, but it was enough for me to be like, you know what? I should have quit this. And I quit the job, and I had a half a plan. Looking back, my family is so supportive because I know they were like, what the hell is he doing? And I called, I remember I have,
at this moment?
Let's see, 8 plus. I got this. I'm like 28, 29. So I was like vague, super young.
Yeah, it was like.
Yeah, it was like 20.
Is it
was
like 17 or is it like 34? Like, yeah, in my mind, like, sometimes at a certain age, you kind of expect a person to be doing that kind of stuff. Like,
right,
you know what I mean?
This is past that. This
well,
is late,
I don't
20s.
Know. No. Well, 27, now, you see, I mean, you are in the improv world. You probably hang out or know a significant number of 20-somethings. 27's when they crumble. Always happens. You got to watch out for them right then. You're like,
right, listen,
hey, did you hear Suzanne's turning 27 this year? Oh, all right. I'll keep an eye.
Yeah, that, listen, like, that Saturn return.
It's a wild time.
Yeah, it's the realest thing. I think, I had to be about 28, 28, 29.
Makes sense. Let's change this life.
I don't want to do this. What are you going to do? Well, all right. So as you know, I'm an improv. And remind me what improv is. Okay, so it's, so you make things up on stage. Yeah. So you're quitting your job to make things. Yeah. So, okay. And then what, how then are you going to feed yourself? Like, no, I'm going to teach. You're going to teach people to make things up on stage. Yes. Mm-hmm. For a living. Mm-hmm. And so that was my pitch. I was like, so I got a couple gigs, and it was literally a couple gigs. It was some assemblies in schools. It was not
assemblies in schools. That's pretty fancy.
Yeah. It was very, I think I had maybe two or three lined up, and I was like, this'll work.
Yeah.
And so I quit, and it works, right? It worked. It did work. It was tight. I got I worked for AmeriCorps for a year.
Wow.
Which I refer to as my paid dues year. And so I had to be, yeah, actually now that I think about it, because I remember I my timelines are my exes where I'm like, oh no, wait, totally. I was third. So I was actually, we turned 30 together. So like 31. Mm-hmm. I was in AmeriCorps, and it was a community art program. And so for the program, I worked at an after school. I taught improv at an after school program, and I worked for this organization called the Creative Alliance. And again, it was one of those things where, like, very tight year because AmeriCorps pays nothing. It's not a salary. It's a stipend. I remember I lived in a room that was very small because it was very cheap. But it was like, this is it, you know, like it's my dream. And I got to fall in love with this next love, which is like working with young people, in community art settings. Like, I was like, oh, this is again. It was just like another, I walk in with the kids working. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. My heart feels good here. And so then I find this other piece of art making, which is working with young people. And so now I have like this performance piece that feels good. I have these teaching things and I have this community art piece that feels good. And now I'm like, okay, now I kind of have direction and these are the things I want to develop. And all of that was, yeah, that was about probably like 8-9 years ago. It's like, I'm full-time as an artist, and full-time as an artist at the time was I'm making no money. I am working a lot and it is amazing. Like, I feel like I'm on an adventure. I have all of this space to explore myself as an artist. And yeah, I started getting into doing a lot of improv. And then I started, because I was working for the Creative Alliance at the time, it opened me up to opportunities to develop myself as a storyteller. And as a storyteller, teacher, and facilitator, and stuff like that. And so I'm kind of like growing, you know, like two pieces, like this improv branch over here. Your listeners can't see my hands. That's not helpful.
I understand what branches are. It's okay.
I hate to brag on my audience, but they do know. They do know trees.
Listen, we've got a big tree section.
My apologies. I did not mean to offend anyone. So I have a branch. I did not mean to suggest to anyone who's listening that you can that you could not conceptualize a branch of a tree without my hand growing.
This is a tree.
So if you look to your left or right out of a window, this big green thing, imagine me. And I can't describe a branch, actually, now that I think about it, but
just improv and the storytelling.
So one branch or arm, if you will, of this tree that is growing is improv, and then the other is storytelling. I hope, can you include a sketch of a tree when this episode drops?
Just a hand tree.
A hand tree.
I'll see if my child can't make it for us.
Thank you. I don't want anyone lost in this very, very incredibly dense metaphor.
It's really difficult to understand how your career breaks into parts. It's
like, I'm so sorry. What? I work in accessible language sometimes, and I should know better. So I don't know I don't know why.
Funny. Now, I have questions about the things you got involved in, because I hear I hear from you this vibe of like, I don't know, I just figured this out and like I just happened to do this kind of thing. But getting involved in the Creative Alliance, like, super smart, never thought of that ever in my career. Getting involved in working for like AmeriCorps, I've heard about. I didn't see how you could arrange it to be improv classes. That's a sweet twist.
That was their first. That was definitely their first.
Because I'd heard people doing that, but it was not anything that sounded remotely like something I wanted to do. But I was like, yo, AmeriCorps can get you improv teaching? Get me in there. But like, I don't know, your angle in is so fascinating, because like, I started with a private theater, and then it was just, you know, schmoes like me. And then they were like, hey, you've done this long enough. Do you want to be a teacher now? And then I was. And like, there's no money in that. There's a little money, but it was like, you know, random crap. If we get money from shows, you get paid to teach kind of scenarios. I wish that I was smart enough to find a creative alliance and like get involved in these like school assemblies. How did you even, I don't know, well, know that that was a path?
Well, that, I mean, that was through my theater. So my theater, theater, I used to be a member of the Baltimore Improv Group. And so the Baltimore Improv Group was involved with the assemblies. So there's an organization called Arts for Learning. It was called Young Audiences for Maryland. And they have our artist roster. And to Maryland's credit, does invest a good amount in arts and education. And so they have these really robust programs for that. And Arts for Learning is one of the biggest programs in Baltimore. And at the time, my theater was a part of it. And so the assemblies and the teaching and stuff was through the theater. And then the AmeriCorps was not through my theater at all. It was actually through there's a school called MICA, which is, mess it up, it's an arts college. And my roommate went to MICA, and he was getting his master's in fine arts and was also in this program. So most of the folks, and there's a program for community artists, a master's in fine arts and community art. And most of the people in the program go through this AmeriCorps as part of it. So it's called the Community Art Collaborative. And they work with community art organizations, and you know, you're basically an intern and you get all of this training. But there are slots for people who are not in the program. And because of that, he knew that where I was at, he was like, look, just come apply for this thing. Stop, you know, because I'm a lot, if on my own, I'm just kind of looking around like, uh-oh, I've done something. And I'm a person that I believe deeply that my community and my higher power are like the reasons why I'm okay in this world, because on my own, I'm just like, I guess I don't do anything now. And then there's always like, I feel like there's just always this divine intervention where someone's looking at me like, that's not, no, get up, stop not doing stuff. I'm like, okay. And so come do this program. So I applied for the program, and it's their first time. They were saying the same thing, like, improv? Okay. I'm like, no, it'll be great, I think. But they, it was the same thing. Like, we haven't done improv as an art form, but it was wonderful because it also, I was also able to bring improv to places in the city that would not be exposed to improv at all, you know? And I'm really proud of that. And so that was another reason why it was really worth it. And then I was assigned to the Creative Alliance as part of that program. So it was kind of like, wow. You get in this and like, oh yeah, community arts as a, community arts practice, I want to get into that. So I learned community art, and then they assigned me to the Creative Alliance Baltimore. And then I'm being exposed to the Creative Alliance in Baltimore, which is not only a performance venue, but it's also, they have resident artists, they have a lot of arts programming in that venue. And so because I am, you know, a part of the education department, I get to explore and learn from all of these huge artists who've been a part of the Creative Alliance and their art process, and these, you know, just connections through to folks in the city.
Wow.
And the same way with, you know, my theater, like I get to be connected with these things. And it is a wonderful experience, you know. I think my second or third year in big, my friend Christopher Whalen Jones was like, hey, we should have an all POC improv team. And we formed, it was called Minority Report then, and then changed to Casually Dope a few years later. And through them, like, we, you know, we got to travel the world. Like, it was wonderful. Like, it was like, we should do this thing. And we formed this group of just extremely talented people, and we got to, and we all just like wanted to just explore what this could be. And so we love fest, like we went to festivals everywhere. We got to, I think one of the things, like, I love performing, I love sharing my art, but the piece that I like, the thing that just gets me juiced up. I don't know why juiced up is the phrase, but we'll go with it. Yeah. Is there's this, I grew up not seeing a lot of myself reflected in media and stage, all that stuff, right? And so there's this thing we would perform and someone would come to us after the show. It's like, I never saw myself on stage. Like, I never, you know, like I'm Black and I didn't think Black people did improv, or, you know, like all of those things, or I'm queer. I've never seen this positive queer version of a comedian on stage. And that's the thing. And like young kids in Baltimore, the same thing. Like, I didn't know we did that. I think it's my favorite review of performing for young people is just like, we do this too. You know, like, yeah, our who we are is endless, you know? And I think that being able to show someone that is beautiful, and but being able to show myself that is the thing, you know, because I think going back to that, that kid with the backpack is just like, who I can be is in, like, I have some Legos and they don't match and I'm in, and it's in a backpack that is like 3 years too young for me. But once I get into whatever this character is, what can happen here is just like, it's endless, you know, you can go on this adventure. And I think that's what art making should feel like. I think it's like this, it's endless. Yeah. And so that, so then I get, so it's like several years of that where I am performing with Casually Dope and at the same time learning different storytelling pieces. So storytelling for me went into a different direction. I'm about to bring the branches back. So now we have
a new branch.
So we have the branch, and now the storytelling branch has branched into branched off as well. So we have the performance branch, which is really fun. It's like I'm performing stories, but then there's this other branch where I was teaching storytelling, but it wasn't teaching just like straight up storytelling. It was around like things like identity and teaching storytelling for like grief processing and all these things, where it was like I was using the practice of storytelling to help people process different things, different like really hard things. And that branch was, yeah, that was really beautiful. And so I got to just like really just explore a lot, just like all these interiors of myself and using art as this healing practice, which is interesting because like that is like this very serious thing. And then I would come to the theater and be like, goofs. It's like all goofs. And I didn't feel, I felt like that was really fun, but I also felt very segmented. I felt like I had a lot of different, I did not feel aligned. It just felt like I can be this part of myself over here and this part of myself over here. And that was like kind of how, that was kind of how things were for, I think right up until the pandemic, where I was a lot of different people and it was fun, but it was like there's like this piece that was missing that I didn't really understand. Yeah,
I understand the idea of it feels like a work-life balance, and it's hard when you're using similar skills to do both the work and the life. And it's I feel that there's, you're like, I'm using all of this creativity in both of these things, and one of them is really emotionally wringing you out, and then you've got to turn it off, I guess, and then like go dance and sing, like, you know what I mean? You're like, okay, now I've got an improv show. Let's not think about how Miss Jones just told me that terrible story about her son dying. Cool. All right, let's do it. So it's like, and the hard part is you're feeling and processing it with your whole heart. Like, you know, the hard part and the crazy part about like doctors, like legit, is that like I feel like the first 2 years are them teaching them how to turn their heart off. Like they're like, don't feel, stop feeling. Let's get away from this feeling thing that you think that you need to do. Don't, because you're going to see everything and it's terrible. So stop that right now. Whereas we're artists, we have the part of the superpower I always think we have is that we actually feel more than other people. We really can get all the nooks and crannies of feeling out of life. And there is something great and beautiful about being able to feel it all, but there's also something harrowing and grotesque and terrible about being able to feel it all. Like, I wish I didn't feel all the things, but then there are moments when I see people who are just so like, I don't get it. And you're like, don't you feel all the things? Like, and I can totally see how for you, I mean, there was just no like in between, you know what I mean? You needed like a palate cleanser or an aura cleanser between those two things. Like, what could you have done? It's like, well, between helping people with storytelling and grief and going to perform this short form improv romp, I danced in glitter to make myself feel better. Like, what do you even do? You know, so I get it. Like, what a, you're tearing yourself, using your skills so intensely well, but just ripping yourself apart.
In the middle of that is also like my work with the young people as well. And so like that, running after school programs and like being like a lot of that is that because I do that with my whole heart as well. And so for a while, the way I would always just dampen everything, I would just like be drinking or like getting high and be like, this is perfect. Like, this is a dampener. And then five years ago, I hit this bottom and I'm like, I need to do something else. Right. I need to find something else. And so I get sober and I get into recovery. And you bet it, another branch. And so this branch starts growing, and it took me a while to be an artist in recovery because of what we were just talking about. One of the ways that I kind of made sense of everything, like I just was like, I used to, so old school with Will Ferrell, he has this towards the end when he has to, he's in this competition and he like has this like blackout moment. And then he just kind of just spits out this brilliance, right? I used to think that I was like, that makes sense. Like that's how much of an alcoholic I was. I was like, oh, I get it. I'll just cut everything off and then just really hyper focus on the moment, and then that's fine. And so I would do that. Like I would do that as like not thinking like, oh man, this is a over the top comedy. So if that's true, then this is not a solution. This is crazy town. But I was like, oh, that makes sense. I'll just do that. I will just cut everything off, hyper focus on the moment, and just spill my heart out. And then I can just pass out at home. That makes sense. It's perfect.
Sure.
The things I will create. And so being an artist in recovery took some adjustments for that reason, and also just for improv is about, it's a very uninhibited feeling. And so to do that, I used to drink for that, like to bring the inhibitions down and stuff like that. And basically like not believing all the stuff I was teaching. I was like, yeah, that's all cool, but what works better is some drinking. And that's how I would do that and like feel like hyped up and go on stage and all that. And so finding courage in other ways was new. And also just like, there's like a neural pathway thing, right? Where you have to like let your stuff remap. And so being an artist in recovery also changed some things for me as well, because that opening, that emotional opening where, cause recovery is all about dealing with life on life's terms and being really open to everything that's happening and not cutting yourself off and like being able to deal with your feelings and everything else. So I couldn't tap in and out as much as I wanted to. And so that, you know, that tearing that we talked about, like that was one of those like tearing things where it was just like, I'm being torn and now I can feel the tears. Cause one thing like to observe, like, huh, this isn't sustainable. Oh, well. But another thing to feel it, I'm like, ah, this is, I am just uncomfortable. So I was doing really great art and not really feeding my artist self. Like I was just like doing the art because I knew it was like, I know how to do this well. I love doing this. But like the nurturing that I needed to do, it was not happening. And so I think that was, the pandemic wasn't the first time where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. Cause I think the first time was right before I got into Casually Dope. Because it was hard. Like it was hard. Like I loved improv, but I felt very alone in it. And Baltimore is like a very black city. I call it one of the blackest cities in the country. And so to be in a really black city with, and know a lot of black people, but then being in a place that there's just not, it felt weird, you know? And I was like falling out of love with it. And then Casually Dope made me fall in love with improv again. It made me fall in love with performance. And I was like, yes. So that, you know, so that was the first time. And that was about 8 or 9 years ago that I was like, okay, I need a moment to remind myself why I love this. And I had that for a while. And then in the pandemic, it frayed so many things. It frayed my relationship with my theater. So I stepped away from my relationship with my theater. I stepped away from Creative Alliance. And I stepped away from everything, actually. I just like kept stepping away. I was like, no, nothing fits.
Yeah. It was hard, though. It was definitely a time of reflection, forced reflection for all of us, where it was like, hey, are you doing it the way you thought you were doing it? You know, it's like you're talking about when you get to that point where you're like, this is unsustainable. Oh, well. And then when the whole world literally shuts down, you mean you're forced to have some thoughts. And especially when your entire career and life path is like, by the way, that doesn't exist right now for X amount of time. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I have an event business. You know what I mean? Ain't no events. And
ain't no events.
That was trouble for quite a while. Yeah. I mean, it's, and it forces you to reflect. Not at all a surprise that you would have been like one by one, like, nope, nope, nope. I mean, and whatever life lessons you personally were experiencing at that time, like were your own. And who knows if either the institutions or the individuals were actually learning the same kinds of things. Like it's been an unusually polarizing time.
Unusually polarized.
I didn't want to use the phrase unprecedented for the 4 millionth time in the last 10 years.
Right.
That's like, also why when you're like, I don't know what time, I don't know how many years it is. I was like, dude, it's still 2019 in my head. Like I literally have not entered this decade yet. Like, no.
Yeah. I think time's definitely a sham. I came to that conclusion a while. I was like, it's a sham. I don't think like it's a measurement, but it's in general, it's a sham. So I don't know why I keep making myself go back to the sham, but some time ago, so, I think just some years ago, but yeah, you're right. It was, I think everyone had a similar experience where a lot of what I know is now doesn't exist. And for me, a lot of my, because I was running after school program at the time. And I remember getting the text that the school system was shutting down like at the end of the day. And it's like, oh, that's now. Okay. And so that was kind of my main source. And then whatever I was doing with the theater. And so it was like everything that I knew immediately was like, no. And I even broke up with like a girlfriend at the time, right before the shutdown. So it was just like because we're creatives, we're dramatic. We can't, there's
sure.
no,
sure.
It's like, no, it's a pandemic. I know, but it's not enough of a pandemic. I need to pandemic more. Like, I need to more pandemic. I want everything on fire.
Hey, some people needed to spend it alone and some people need to spend it with people. And to be honest, what we needed was often not taken into account by where we were put. But at the same time, I don't know if it's half. Some percentage of people were alone and some percentage of people had. I had my husband used to travel, would travel for work. He was on the road 48 weeks out of 52 of every year for 3 years previous to the pandemic. And then he was home.
Oh, my God.
It was very different from my regular life. He was just there. He kept talking to me. I was like,
terrifying.
What? What do you mean the planes aren't working? Go.
Drive.
Like, find another place. They don't have events Train. Anymore, babe. I can't work in events. I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. I mean, you know, so things got wild. The idea that you broke up, I was like, that sounds great. I should have done that. No, I...
Damn it. Everyone had a better pandemic. Yeah.
Man, I did not make sourdough once.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I knew that part I knew I wasn't going to. Like, I was like, oh, no, there's no yeast. And I said, it doesn't matter. Like, I was worried. I was like, you don't bake. What do you care? What are you talking? Like, I really was on Amazon one day searching for yeast. And I was like, why would it matter if you had yeast? What would you do with it? What do you shut up? Go do something. But yeah, I think I don't know how I wanted it. I know I did not want to be alone, but I am very grateful that I had to be, because I think, like most people, like I got a chance to really have to confront some things that I did not want to confront. And this idea that I'm supposed to have all of these separate pieces of myself was one of those things where I'm like, maybe that's what's making, what's one of the reasons why I'm unhappy is because for me, when I'm making art the best, I am completely open. Mm-hmm. And there's no way for me to be completely open if I am constantly segmenting and fragmenting pieces of myself, because there's no moment that I have. I don't even have my whole self for a moment. So how can I be open if I don't have my whole self? So like I didn't have the language for it at the time, but I just knew that something was changing. And so I was also, you know, I think misery gets a bad rap, but because it's misery. However, sure. If I'm not, you know, extremely uncomfortable, then a lot of times I won't move. And so the being miserable, it was the second or third time in my life, I was like, the word miserable is like how I describe my life. And the first time, that time when I quit my job was like that. And then this, where I'm just looking around, like all of these things that really is like how I validated myself too. That I think that's the hard part. Like comedy is so much validation. Like it's so much validation. And I performed all the time. We like at least two times a week. So, and our Casually Dope show was an hour show. So it wasn't even like a quick hit. That was an hour of straight in the IV validation. And we had this quick pace show that we did. So it was like laugh, 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 laugh. So another part that was tough was like I was cut off from income, and I was also cut off from my validation kick immediately. It's just like, how do you know you're funny? How do you know, like, how do I know I'm an artist if people aren't clapping for me? How do I know I'm funny if people aren't laughing? How do I know I'm supposed to do this if someone is not telling me I'm supposed to do it all the time? Because that's the thing, like after a show, there's people running, man, that was really great. I'm really glad you do this. Da 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 da. And it's like, oh, I should be doing this. Like if I get that all over and over and over, then somewhere in my brain, I was like, this is evidence that I should be doing that because people are laughing and people are telling me how they feel about the art that I make and people are telling me what it does to them. And so if I don't get any of that, like just really abruptly, and of course I'm just like, well shit. You know, like I don't even know if I should be doing any of this stuff, or what I want to do. And so that was a thing. And so that was happening. I was like, okay, I need to figure this out. I need to figure out like how, what I wanted to do, but I also had to make money. And so the one thing I knew that I could do, I could teach improv. I'd be teaching. And one of the things I was really excited about, because I think when you're part of a theater and you're part of a troupe, your identity is a part of a theater, part of the troupe. And so for me, I did not know if me individually as an artist, like, did I have, you know, like, did people see the value in that? But people did. Like, theaters reached out, like Coalition and Theater in Richmond, Bad Dog Theater in Toronto, and a lot of theaters, like, for one-off stuff. Like, I did something with Pittsburgh, like, a lot of one-off workshops and stuff. A lot of people were like, yeah, come do stuff with us, please. And so I was like, oh, okay, people like me. People really like me. And so I started this, hey y'all, another branch is coming. So the branch alert, bah, 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 bah. So independent artist branch is growing. It's growing. And I'm getting to, and so I think it was 2 years ago, I officially announced I'm an independent artist, like fully independent. And that was really not scary when I announced it, because I had already just been doing it. And it was just like this official, like, I'm a free agent, come get me.
It's hard though to be a free agent.
It's hard.
You want to be part of something else, and then they make you feel like you're nothing if you're not part of this. And then the community idea of it. Oh, I feel like independent artists, like legit, like the real idea of it is a very post-pandemic thing. But like, because there was all this time for us to not be in the thick of the theater and too busy to talk about it. And instead there was this like overall discussion. And I don't even know if perhaps you were discussing it, but this idea that artists over institutions, the idea that teaching artists all across the world to value the individual artist that's like bringing you this great workshop or inspiring you to do something and lauding that individual as opposed to a school, an institution that's like supposedly bringing you the best of this or that, like, and that a lot of people were disillusioned with the institution of a lot of theater because it just kind of wasn't helpful when we needed it to be helpful. And so, and then also the other part was, turns out business is hard if there aren't shows. And we watched a bunch literally close down, and you were like, wait, what? I'm not closed down. They're closed down. What's happening right now? How am I? So I like that. Like, I appreciate that there was this moment, and I feel like it was very zeitgeist in the artist world for you to be like, I embrace myself as a talent, as an individualized talent, and I will bring this talent wherever I want to. And I'm like,
yeah,
yes.
Hell yeah.
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 The whole world.
It is hard. It is hard, especially in improv, to be unaffiliated with the theater, because you know, that is how your kind of validation, especially if you want to teach, if I want to teach a workshop at a festival, like, that's how they announce, like, this person who is attached to this theater, or this person who's attached to this troupe. So being unattached, it's like, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah.
And so that part is hard. like it is hard to like be unattached and improv with, it's a team sport. And it's like, well, where's your troop? Where's your thing? Where's proof? Where's your proof that you know how to do this and that people, you know, that you've been, that you're a part of something, because that is the improv way. So it's not easy. It wasn't scary, but it is hard. And it's really hard because the ebb and flow of being an independent artist is a lot. Like there's no guarantee. No. Like I am the business. And so I have to learn how to be a good boss, you know, like I've always been a good employee, but being a good boss is hard. I'm just like working and like no vacation days, no time off. I'm like, hey, man, I was just wondering, can I sleep? Like it's been 12 days. It's like, business is good. So we got to work. It's like, okay, cool. Please, you know, and I have to have these conversations with myself. Like, I understand that we need to get this money, but I need a weekend or something or a day. And so
I feel that so much. Once our event business kicked back in, I was like, I don't know when the bottom might drop out again. I can't stop working. Like I only like legit. I just returned from like the time I took off. I took off like 8 days and it felt like an eternity to not be working, even though things are slow. So it's like not a big deal, but it's like, oh my God. I can't believe I'm not working right now. Like, it's so intense. Like you feel like you have to be on it when you are running your own business and doing your own thing. Oh man, breaks are super hard.
Yeah, they're hard. And then I think there's that I think I'm used to now, but there's an ebb and flow to work that I was not, because there's no guarantee. So when work is working, when we're like that, it's like that. But then when there's no gigs and everything else, my friend was joking about it because she was like, I feel there's a time, it's usually like December, January, where it's just like there's nothing happening. It's like this cold, desolate land and gig world. She's like, yeah, I think that's always when you feel like you're never going to be paid again. And I was like, yeah, that's typically how I'm like, well, nothing fell through. So this is it for me, writing from the farm. Good luck to everyone else. I think I'm going to sell off the last head of cattle and hope we make it through the winter. I'm so sorry if I never see you again. You know, that is how, that's how I feel.
I think that might be a more of an indicator of seasonal affective disorder than it really is about. I was going to say, too. To be honest, January, in my opinion, is the best time to sell improv classes. Everybody thinks they're a comedian right on January 1st. And you can boost that. Like, just, you know, get a Groupon for working with you. Get that, you get all that money in, and then you do the classes later. But, you know, January 1st, people are like, you know what? This is the year. This is the year.
I think you know that money comes in, for classes that people are signing up for in January, typically like that is like, for me, it's usually February money. Like once it's like paid and stuff like that, if I'm going through, like if I'm being contracted by a theater for it, they might get the signups. So that's when the actual, but like when
it feels like now you're an independent artist. Money goes straight to you.
Yeah. Well,
into your bank account. Yeah.
I have to set, and then it's like setting the systems up. So I think it's hard.
Oh, you're right. Like, there's so many things.
It's so many things. Yeah. And so it's like I am a business. I'm a businessman. And then again, I'm an artist. And when I'm too focused on over here, then like there's an artist self that is, not being fed. And that's not good. Cause it's just like, it's a child. That's like in a temper tantrum. It's just like, you are not feeding me. We're not having fun. I've not been in awe. I've not, and all these things. And so what I've come to, like where I'm at right now, is I skipped a very important part of the story. So,
oh, okay. Another branch, perhaps.
Oh, you know it. What's up? Bow, 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 bow. That's the branch sound. So I'm in the pandemic, right? And it's all me all the time. And, you know, at the time of the pandemic, before, like years before, I identified as, at first, I think I started with gender nonconforming, and then I was like, no, I'm a trans man. So I started identifying as that. And then a year and a half ago, I was having like this meditation moment, and there's this thing that's like, yeah, so when are we going to actually transition? And I was like, whoa, what do you mean? Like I hadn't medically transitioned yet. Like I hadn't started that process. And so then I start that process. So I start the medical transition, I start the hormones. And so now we have like this medical transition branch that's growing. And transitioning is puberty. You are entering your the doctor explains like first we're like going, taking it back to like your prepubescent self, and then we're taking you forward into a new puberty. And so speaking that, so that's what the artist self made me think of, because there's like this need for me to be very much like in touch with all of my pieces at once, because I have this teenage boy who's just like, well, hormones are raging, so I don't care. I don't care about anything you're trying to do. I need my needs met. And that also has affected and grown my art, because getting back to like the original thing of like, I feel like I was all of these different people at different times. Part of the medical transition is like, oh, you are like this complete person all of the time now. And so my art like comes into alignment more with like who I am, and I can do like the silly things over here. I can do the business stuff over here. And there's like not, it's like, oh, right, they're branches, but the branches are of a tree. Okay, I'm like one person now. Bet. So that is like this nice groovy place that I'm in now, where I am not, you know, I'm not, there's no changing around. Like I'm just like, I'm this independent artist, and I get to like do these really cool, dope things, and explore that. And now, yeah, it's just taking me some places I never thought I'd be. And so that's
great.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
That's great.
I think so.
I also like how you completed the metaphor and how you're the trunk of the tree now, because like you've brought all the pieces together and it makes sense. Like that was chef's kiss right there. Like that was really great. That's how, ladies and gentlemen, that's how you know this is an amazing storyteller right there. Brought it together.
Listeners, you can't see it, but I'm bowing and making shots in the corner to celebrate what just happened. That was improvised stories. That was
so
improvised
good.
Story, folks. It's like good.
That's great.
Yeah.
Man. So I like that everything's coming together for you. I love that this is a good spot. Can I ask a question? You're welcome to not answer it if you don't want to.
Of course.
How old are you?
I will be 40 in 1 month.
Great.
And I'm
great.
39.
Awesome.
40.
Awesome.
You seem relieved. Can I?
I'm 44.
Ask?
Okay, so okay. I have this theory.
You're so relieved?
No, I'm not relieved because of that. Believe me. So I have this theory of life that we become different people every 18 years, and that like we're that like there are journeys that we go through to like from like if you think of like the child's journey from 0 to 18, like grows up, figures out how to walk, figures out what to do, figures out how to talk, how to get connected,
learns things around like 8 or 9, has like this epiphany of like life and death, like gets it in a new way, like understanding. You get older, you get angsty, there's things that happen, right? And then at 18, it's like you begin a new thing. You begin a new part of your life. Now you've got to do it on your own. And sometimes, you know, there's still connections. A lot of us still hang out with our parents for a while in our 20s, you know, but it's still, but so do babies, right? So my thought is, when I was getting older and I was reflecting on my own life changes and the things that had gone on and like how I felt, like, so when I turned 36, in my mind, everything that I wanted had come together. Like, it was the thing. I was working full time at a theater. I was running this program. It was exactly what I wanted to be doing, exactly right. And then after that, it slowly broke apart and things moved on into the next phase of my life. But there was like I built to something and then I got that something and then everything broke apart again and I had to become a new person. And now I'm 44. So that's quite a while into my third cycle in my theory. And so like I'm in this spot and I try to be forgiving of myself in the spot by like a child's path, right? So so in this like finally coming together to like become yourself, like seemed so like I thought you're gonna be like, I'm 37, and I was gonna be like, oh, I figured it out. Like, but it's close enough. 39 is fine. Like, but the idea is right around this time, like at the end of your 30s, there's this, you get to finally understand some of the lessons that like you've been developing for yourself from 18. You know, there's 0 to 18, all the things that your parents did, the world did to you because you're a child, no one cares about children kind of thing. And then you have to then, and then they go like, and now play in the playground. And you're like, what? And you have to do it forever now, right? So then the first round of it, 18 to 36, you're like throwing things against the wall and like, do I like this? I don't know. That's maybe, you know. And so then we continue to get older because it turns out 36 isn't the end of life anymore because it's not the middle ages. So we got to keep aging. And what I think we don't give ourselves like the understanding and the grace about is the later cycles that like I'm right. Okay. Right now I'm in this journey. I'm doing this. But when I'm 54, who knows? Maybe I'll be like, I figured this out, but I got to do something else now. Like, who knows? So I don't know. I bring it up purely because I love the idea of your story about how like you finally felt right and like it came together for you. And I feel like the beauty of that is that like now you start this new journey as yourself in this new form, like a new you who you feel like now you're at this level of understanding of your own life's journey. And then you get to whatever else happens, like it's exciting and new and different and, you know, and sometimes I think in the early years, because I felt like this, like right when I turned 40, I mean, I was pro turning 40. 40s have been good, 40 to 44, A plus. But also like, yeah, I'm feeling great about it. But that being said, my situation of hormonal reactions different than yours. So maybe that's why I'm psyched. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I had a baby at 39 too. So everyone was like, a medical marvel, you know, ridiculousness.
I like that. They turned into the 50s news when you had it.
Absolutely. No, they definitely
breaking.
They said, okay, side note of that, they sent me to a separate doctor because I was a geriatric pregnancy, quote unquote. And the special doctor was like way nice and had amazing technology, whereas my regular doctor was like using like Korean War things to like listen to, I think I hear the heartbeat. Like, and you're like, thanks, doc. I appreciate that. And I go to the one where it's supposed to make me feel bad, where they're like, hello, old woman, you're having a baby. Great. Come on in. Can I hold your hand? And you're like, sure, I guess. And then they give you like, you know, delicious water and you're looking at like a huge HD screen of like a 3D rendering of what's inside your body. Yes. And you're like, I'll take it. You can insult me all day in the way in if I get this. Like,
Geriatric's looking pretty nice over there.
Right? I'm just saying, anyone who's on the fence and is older and is like, should I have a do it? I mean, do they it. Give you special science. But anyway, nice. In the life journey, I'm just like super into, you know, both of us are now in the third journey and like, what's that going to be? And like, I'm interested about like cool things we can learn and like embracing it as opposed to, I feel like generations past have been like, well, I'm 40, that's it. And they hang it up and then they make no new decisions.
What are you doing? I'm settled. I'm done.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I live in a lazy boy now. And you're like, okay, well, or you could do other things. Like, how do we save the lazy boy for later? Buy it now, sure. But you don't need to sit in it every day. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different, like my mom is in her 70s. She won't listen this far. And like, she's living a party lifestyle. Like she lives in condos with like other widows and they like do like water aerobics every day and drink wine at night. Like good times. Nice. You know what I mean? Like legit, but that's, she got there. You know, she wasn't there when she was our age, right? Like she was in the thick of her job and all the stuff. And so let my mom be an example that someday we can sit on a beach and drink wine and it'll be okay.
It'll be okay. When I was young, I always read about older people in these condominiums and I did not know exactly what it was. Like it always seemed just this magical place to work for. And so I was like, I can't wait till I get my own condominium. And so I thought it was just something you had to get because it was always spelled out like that. It was never a condo. It was spelled out just like that. And it was always in Florida. And so I just was like, if you work hard enough, like you get a condominium in Florida. And so, so I was just like, I can't wait to downsize. I have little to nothing now, but I'm already looking forward to having to. It's time for us to downsize, as you know we are going to. I don't have kids right now, but I'm already looking forward to explaining to my kids. It's time for me and their mom to downsize. We are getting our condominium in Florida. And it's like, Dad, can it be a condo? No, it's a condominium. And so it's time for you. That's what they call it. And so it's time for you to take your childhood things. And again, speaking of like, I have two 18 year cycles to do to get to that point, but I'm already looking forward to, I'm like, I have no parts of that right now, but I'm already looking forward to explain to my kids, like it's time for us.
Mom, can I have the condo in your will? Could we like set it up or
just set it up now? I'm not rushing you. I just want to make sure that I need something to look forward to.
Write it down.
But that's how I feel. I think that I'm thrilled to be where I'm at. You know, like I think that there is, I'm just getting started in a lot of things because, I know you'd be like, no, you can't. You already completed the tree, but the tree's not complete.
Of course it's not. There's only like a couple of rings in there, man. There's so much more to grow.
Because the branch that I started in the last 12 months is a filmmaker. So I'm currently working on my first documentary. It's called Damn Y'all Fine. And it's a celebration, an exploration of Black, queer, and trans aesthetic in Baltimore. And I'm like, I'm too many things right now. Like, of course, I'm having the time of my life. Like, I am, and I get to be. Also, I'm very fortunate. Like, I want to be clear about that. Like, there is the fact that my first pitch like projects is being produced. Like there's a collective, Rooted Collective that I'm a part of. And we had done fundraising for a number of events that we planned pre-COVID. And then obviously COVID happened. So it was like, okay, we have this money and the funders like, you know, use it around this area. I pitched this idea to them. And I was like, I want to do this thing. And it wasn't just, it was a yes. And basically it wasn't just like, yeah, that sounds fun. It was like, yes. And let's put some of the funding that we have towards this, you know? And so that's rare, you know, like I don't have a portfolio of other documentaries to prove my work. It's just like, I have, we know that you're an artist. We know that you know how to do things. We know you're an excellent storyteller. And then also another member of the collective, Dr. Kalima Young, is a film professor and has a lot more film, and was like, yes, I believe in this project, let's do it. And so that's like, that's just, that doesn't happen, you know. Like I feel very, that's why I say, like, there's a good amount of divinity in my story, because like a lot of what I can do is a path that like I'm very fortunate to have, where I'm like, I'm very talented. I definitely can do it, but the opportunities to do it and the relationships that I have are something that I hold very sacred, because I know that it is something that allows me to, yeah, just go a little bit further. And so I'm really excited about that. I also just became a professional voiceover actor, which is like. I know what you're saying. He does another branch of this tree, but I'm a big ass tree. Y'all.
You know what? You gotta have a lot of branches. I'm sorry, but freelance trees gotta have a lot of branches. If I learned anything from the pandemic, it's the more side hustles you get, the safer you are. That's all I know.
The safer you are, and I think it's also just that, and like invest in whatever you're doing, because I think a lot of something that I see is people kind of touch something once and it's just like, oh, this is what I do now. But you don't invest in the skill development and all the rest of that stuff, which I think is detrimental to you and also to all of us, because people, I don't like when people do that, because I think it looks bad on like the independent artists community, because I'm just like, they're like, oh, independent artists, they just make shit up. They just say their thing. And so I want everyone to invest in excellence and please, whatever you say you're doing, please do it well. So folks,
I think
that we're just making stuff up.
Well, you're working hard, you know, you're putting a lot of effort in, and I appreciate that. That matters, and it, you know, hopefully can inspire people to do the same. Do a lot of people just float by? Sure, they half-ass everything, and that's fine, but that's okay, because that's their life, and maybe they don't get the true joys and the deep fulfillment that we get to have, because we actually care and put effort into the work that we're doing. So
you're right.
Everyone sometimes gets, I'm like, you know, you don't care. Well, good luck with your not caring life. I'm sorry that you're sad. True. I got a lot of things going on.
That is a good point. Yeah, I like that change in my perspective, because it is a deep joy to care deeply about what we do. And so, there's a depth that we get to touch because we care, and because it's not just a thing. Not half full-assing. It's just,
yeah. It's the burden of the superpower of being able to connect so deeply to other people, to ourselves, to the like essence of humanity. We get that. Other people don't get that. So the burden of that superhero is the fact that you have to look around and be like, what? You don't see this? How are you not noticing how amazing this is? Like, and they don't, but that's, you know. That's just their thing. Who knows what their superpower is? You'll find out.
True.
Maybe they'll lift a car off you at some day, and you'll be like, oh, she's really strong. So that's cool.
Yeah,
I like her.
I'm
that
like, oh, fine. My bad. I thought you were half-assing, but you were, it was you.
All your effort was in the strength.
Yeah, which is totally fine. It. You should, yeah, you can do whatever you want on stage. Just keep lifting cars off
just
me.
Keep
you're
lifting
right.
Cars. Yeah,
it's yeah, cool. You're fine. You're right.
He has other skills.
Yeah. I didn't even think
some
about it.
Some of
like
us
that.
Feel feelings, others lift things. You know, it's important.
Still superpowers.
It is. They're
important.
Powerful, necessary.
They're so powerful. I'm just as important as Superman. I watched a lot of I love DC animated universe. It is the superior cinematic universe. Sorry, Marvel fans.
Deep cuts late in the episode.
Yeah. Actually, watching The Reign of the Superman last night reminded me of what we were talking about, that there is like these, you know, different skills and different superpowers. But I like that. I like our caring and our love and our ability to see what isn't there as superpowers. That feels good.
Yeah, yeah, I'd much rather be me than other people, even though sometimes it's hard. And sometimes I'm like, why is everyone so like mean? And I'm sad for everything. I don't understand, but it's okay. You just got to take those lumps occasionally, because the full breadth of the human experience and feeling it and understanding and caring for people, I'll take it. I'll take it. It's good. I mean, the improv of it all is... people like to make fun of it like it's just make 'em ups, but it's like literally like flipping a switch in your soul to like understand things differently. And yeah, you know, I get you. Some people are like, improv was just a bunch of bros. I was like, no, I mean, maybe some places, sure. But even those bros, too bad. The switch is flipped. And even though they're a little bro-y right now, absolutely not. Yeah. That is cracking them open, because it is an art form and it doesn't matter who it's affecting. It is this open, beautiful, letting you into so many different emotions kind of art form. So its magic is stronger than anyone who can resist it. That's what
that's beautiful. Yeah. You can't be untouched.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so many people out there in the world who will like resist improv. Oh, you know, that's not really me. Okay, sure. Good luck to you then. Hope it works out. And then there's people who come in and you're just, you know, like they're a surgeon, but they needed some funsy things to do. And then they're touched. Like they find this little kernel of the world that they didn't see because they'd been focusing on this other career or whatever else. I mean, I've had plenty of improv students along the way that were not actors, you know what I mean? And then you're like, and then it's almost like you turn to them and you're like, we let you in for a second. This is what it's like in here. Okay.
It's like all the time.
Good luck back in the hospital. We've got your back.
Like, right, we got your back. Now go back.
Yeah. We need you to go back into the world. Just keep that heart pure. Like, I don't know. There's something really beautiful about improv. And I just, as we were chatting a moment ago, I was writing down all your branches, you know, to review in my notes. And it's just like, it's like compounded skills. You know, it's like your story started with falling in love with improv. And then it was just like other skills that built off of that sort of like way of viewing the world and, you know, connecting with people, whether it be connecting with kids and letting them play as children, or connecting with businesses and being like, hey, relax with your business, let's have a little fun. Or even the storytelling that you were doing that was therapeutic for people. Like, you're using these skills and then like taking the clay and adding a little bit more and like just making it, it's all this one, your skills, your superpowers. And like, it's great. And the idea that you're surprised that people would trust you to be this filmmaker, absolutely not. You have all of this, all of these skills that you've developed over time, and you have them. And the skills that you have are exactly the ones that you would need to make this. So you're in the right place for your next exciting adventure. And it's going to be great.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Thanks. Thank you. I needed that. Thank you. Hell yeah.
So one last thing and then I'll let you go. What, I know we've talked about how you've been busy working, but like, what are you creatively taking in? Are you watching TV? Are you a walk in nature kind of person? Are you, what are the things that you do to, you know, slough off the rough times and freshen up?
Yeah, I am big a walk in nature type of person. There's a trail that's not far from me that there's water that I need in my throat right now. Excuse me.
Okay. I thought you were talking about water at the trail. I was like, oh, that sounds nice.
There is. So typically at least once a week, I go to a place I call my surrender spot. And it's in the it's a place in, along this trail, Stony Run, in Baltimore. And there's several different pieces that I sit, but it's typically me sitting on a rock looking at a stream and just kind of turning over all of the things that I'm holding on to and all of that. So that practice keeps me very open, free, very connected to my higher power. I practice like ancestor reverence. So I have like an altar and things like that. So like that, those spiritual practices like definitely keep me grounded and aligned and open. And yeah, I do consume good and bad TV. I love superhero stuff. Like it's just that boy in me is strong. Like he did not grow up. It was just like more superhero stuff. So I'm watching, I think I'm currently watching The Boys on Amazon. Like that is my show. I am cannot wait till Invincible comes back. I'm rewatching the DC Animated Universe in order. That's my current TV project. It's my project. Like I have to spend time with that. Mm-hmm. And then I also just like, I'm trying to think of the last documentary I read, but like creative documentaries typically about artists are something that's really nurturing. I think I rewatched Beyonce's Homecoming the other day. And it's just something about similar to this podcast where I love listening to other creatives talk about like how they create and all that. It's very inspiring for me. Like I get really pumped up. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. I too am Beyonce. So just trying to be the Beyonce that we all are. Something that touches that and music. I'm a huge, like, I love just getting lost in that. So I touch a lot of art. I read, what am I reading? I'm reading a serious book, Patriarchy Blues, right now. But all of that, working with young people, like all of that, I feel like nourishes my artist self because I'm like I feel inspired by it all, but also just, I don't know, there's some certain places in me that need to be touched for me to make and like the sweetness, like I try to bring sweetness into my life. That's like a practice I've been intentional about for the last years. Like how can I practice sweetness, whether I'm being sweet or like allowing sweetness in, and all of that. So like that practice of joy, there's a lot. Yeah. A lot I do to feed myself. And I take naps. Oh, I take, nice. Yeah, I hate to brag, but I'm
super really, jealous.
Yeah, I'm really good. Well, every single mother I know when I say this, like, oh yeah, take naps. I'm like, yeah. So when you're tired or how do you do it? But I get tired and lay down. No one's asking for anything. No, I just nap. I don't know. It's like, so I was like, huh? Tell me about it, huh? You just lay your body down till you,
good.
Yeah. So you just sleep till you don't want to sleep no more. Is that what wakes you up? Like, I don't know. Oh, must be nice. Must be nice to just have choices in when you sleep and when you stop sleeping. I don't know any other way.
That's so funny. It's too real. You really get it. You really appreciate that. That's really helpful.
I do. I do. Yeah. I understand why that was
so funny.
Here, but I take naps. Sorry for all of the people that don't get to nap on their own schedule. Shout out to all the parents out there that don't understand what I just said. It's a lot of parents are like, naps. I know it's what I send my child to do as a last resort, but for myself. So I take naps.
It's pretty good.
It's so good. They're so good. Not every day, but I try to take naps a couple times a week and I touch the outside and I laugh as much as possible.
I don't doubt that.
I have to.
just who you are. Oh, man. It has been a total pleasure. Ty Malik, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that you found me because I also appreciate your time. You give really wonderful reflections and I needed to hear them. So thank you.
Good. Good. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.